Hello, hello, Spies and Lies listeners.
Hello, but again.
What is it? Now you laugh every time we say hello? What's the deal?
Well, I thought, well, I'll say goodbye.
I don't know. You try to be so serious after last episode with the monkey, and now...
Well, the monkey was a serious episode.
And now you want to be laughing? I thought you wanted to be serious.
Okay, let's be serious.
Very serious.
Hello.
I mean, it's a serious topic, what we're going into today.
Okay.
As always, listeners, thank you for joining in, and if you want to help promote the show, please tell your friends, like and subscribe, and of course, leave us a review. Welcome to Spies and Lies, an espionage podcast, co-hosted by me, Omri Rose, who spent his childhood living undercover, thanks to his dear old dad and co-host, Jason, a retired former spy master for one of the top intelligence agencies in the world. Without further ado, let's dive into today's episode. Are we in a second Cold War?
I don't know. Let's see.
Well, look around you, are we?
It's bloody cold in your room here.
Well, this is a cool room.
No, it's on the serious side. We're in a different phase.
Before being assassinated, most likely by Vladimir Putin, Alexei Navalny said,
"It is difficult for me to understand exactly what is going on in Putin's mind. 20 years of power would spoil anyone and make them crazy. He thinks he can do whatever he wants."
Would you agree with that assessment?
Yes. Anyone who's been in power for that long thinks he can get away with everything, no matter where you are in the world.
Yeah, I mean, we can certainly see that for world leaders around the world.
Correct.
That power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, yes. As the saying goes. I think one of the great genius acts of George Washington was not running for a third term. You know, they wanted him, but two was enough. Term limits, very important.
It is important. Unfortunately, not every country does that.
Let me ask you something. Within the organization, are there term limits for the higher up seats?
Of course they are.
So you're not allowed to indefinitely stay in the same seat, the same position.
Basically, you would want people to change every 3-4 years.
Even the top position?
The top position is usually appointed by the head of state or minister, depends on who it is. And usually it's determined for a specific number of years. And it is then renewed on a yearly basis.
A yearly or after those terms of years
usually,
are completed?
If it's a 4 or 5 years, then you get another year, maybe another year. But you don't stay 5 years and think, okay, let's give another 3.
Right. So it's like
5. So you might find yourself staying for 6 or 7 years, but you don't know that's going to happen from the start.
Right.
Okay. And that's the right thing.
Absolutely. No, it's absolutely the right thing. And also, there's a retirement age, you know, at least for...
Not always for this top spot.
Not for the top spot, but for the other spots.
Usually it's as you're a civil servant, you're required to retire at a certain age. Now, there's some organizations that by the age of 55, you have to retire. You have to leave. Other organizations say,
even for the top spot?
The top spot are allowed to stay later than that. There are other organizations where, as you are a civil servant and the retirement age is 65 or 67, as well as different for women and men, then you can stay into these positions until the end.
So they differentiate between men and women as retirement ages?
In retirement ages, yes, yeah. If it's a civil service, yes.
Right, interesting. And of course, the appointments of the top job is not always internal. In fact, oftentimes it's not internal, right?
Sometimes it's someone who's brought in by the head of state or the head of the prime minister, who decides that he wants a certain person in there. And it doesn't necessarily mean the guy is a professional. Mm-hmm. It depends on the nature of the service and what is expected the service to do, internal, external. If your major objective is to stay in power and your major problem is your local opposition, then obviously the person you put in that position is going to be someone you trust, and usually you don't want to change him that often.
Now we're talking about someone like Putin here.
Exactly.
It's a very interesting quote that Navalny said. He thinks he can do whatever he wants. I don't know if I 100% agree that he thinks he can do whatever he wants. I think he wants to think that he can do whatever he wants, but I think he's cleverer than thinking that he can actually do whatever he wants.
I have to disagree, because in his mind, he can do everything he wants in his country.
In his country, sure.
Okay.
Maybe, yeah.
Now, externally, it depends on what he does. He has the reaction of the outside world. Now, it all comes down to how much information is he fed that gives him the real picture,
mm-hmm.
or how much is it what he thinks is the real picture.
This goes all the way back to Moses and how you give information when you're given a task. And we discussed this, that with leaders, if you're feared, someone like Putin, who you might want to be afraid to bring bad news to, how much can you actually rely on the news that's being fed to you, the information that's being given to you?
If the leader reacts badly to things that he does not want to hear, then the person, then the messenger has a problem delivering these messages.
Mm-hmm.
A good leader should be in a position that even if the information is received or is getting is not what he wants to hear, he doesn't execute or
punish or
fire the person. It's an art mm-hmm. in any organization and even in any business. It could be a private section as well. If you have a certain direction you want to go and someone says something opposite, do you allow it to be said? Yes. But do you then keep him close to you? Do you then get rid of him? Do you move on, or you change the reality? Leaders have a tendency to want that the people around them will give them the answers they want and not always go against them. It's very difficult in the long term to go against the leader, because in the end, the leader wants yes men.
I mean, we've seen this even with Russian leaders in the past in some of our Cold War episodes, how they're trying to get specific information. And so the people that give them that information are gearing their entire operation towards doing that and not necessarily giving accurate information as a result, because find me X there, you're going to find X there, because that's what they want. Anyway, we've talked a lot about a single quote, but what brings us to today's episode? We are recording on March 22nd, 2024. And a week or so ago, my brother, who I have, your son, who you also have, another one of, sent me and you an article that I thought was quite interesting. The article was about an event that occurred in the beginning of March, and it reported on what was said to be the worst intelligence breach since the Cold War. Now, I don't know if I would characterize it exactly as that in the article, though things do tend to be sensationalized in the media. But what it was talking about was that Germany had spilled British military secrets to Russia about Ukraine, which was quite a nice little brief article. And it got me thinking about a number of different things and how we've had the Ukraine episodes out and we've had new ones being requested. And it just got me thinking in general about the whole situation in the world right now. And it feels in a number of ways a little bit like a Cold War. Do you have any thoughts on that general premise?
Look, I lived through the Cold War,
mm-hmm.
so I remember what the Cold War was about.
Right.
This is not it doesn't feel the same. It's not cold.
It's not cold.
There's always been tension. There's always been a war. In the old days, it was the Iron Curtain.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't travel into Russia or the Soviet Union. You couldn't. There were other countries that tried to get away from the Soviet Union, and they were forcefully stopped from doing it. It was a different feeling, and the media was different. The openness today, everything is open.
Well, we're living in a different world as well, so it can't be exactly the same.
It's not the same. It's not complete. I think the people in Russia still know what the West is like, and they travel and they can move around.
In the old days, no one traveled. They have restricted media there.
Yes,
but
they can travel to most places in the world,
mm-hmm.
Or they can go to different places and meet. It's not the same thing like it used to be in the Cold War.
Okay.
But if you want to say, okay, where there's a situation of a confrontation between the West and Russia and maybe one or two other countries, then yes, because you would say, I would put it this way. There's a reason why Sweden and Finland
yeah, just
join NATO.
And Ukraine would love to, of course.
Right. There's a reason for that. And the reason is not because things are getting better. And they feel that they have to make a stand and they have to make a decision because things have changed. And what happened with the invasion of Russia to Ukraine changed things.
Yeah.
Now, we've never, even in the Cold War, we haven't had a change of the status quo. Now, you could say Ukraine was always... Yes. No, I'm talking about Europe because that's where the main arena is. You could say that Ukraine was never part of the West, so therefore it's an Russian internal issue. And that's why the Russians would like to say it. But that's not the real situation at the moment. That's not the real reality of how things are at the moment. It's different. If, for instance, a part of Russia would like to take, let's say, Chechnya, wanted to be independent, and the Russians went in, no one's going to do anything. It's part of Russia, you know?
But what would happen if Chechnya was on the other side of Russia? Say, you know, I mean, there's a geographic aspect to it, too.
You know where Kaliningrad is, right? Okay. Kaliningrad is, if you remember...
Let's look at the map.
No.
Kaliningrad. Okay. Kaliningrad. Where is that?
Where is that? Okay, have a look.
Kaliningrad. It is a city in Russia, Google tells me. That much I knew. Thank you, Google.
Okay.
Kaliningrad.
And where is it? You know where it is?
Ah, it's by Lithuania.
Yes, it's an enclave that's Russian, but it's surrounded by...
By Poland, Lithuania. Yes. You could say Latvia and Belarus as well if you wanted.
Now, they are Russians and they want to be part of Russia, and they are Russians. Okay? Now, if they decide they want to be independent or to join one of these countries, then you have a different scenario because this is a Russian affair. This is not an it's not like Estonia or Lithuania trying to become independent or deciding something or they want to go to become part of NATO or not. So it's a different situation. So your question to me is
does it feel like a Cold War? Not so much, but something else.
It's different. It's a different scenario.
All right.
It's making the rules, defining the rules again.
Okay, so let's not say Cold War, but things are heating up. And certainly as far as espionage is concerned, there seems to be a bigger game afoot, let's call it. But bringing us to the story that my brother shared, what happened was that a German Luftwaffe Air Force lieutenant, General Ingo Gerhards, was conducting a highly classified conversation that was intercepted by Russian agencies and then broadcast on Russian state TV. In this conversation, sensitive data was divulged, such as the revelation of the location of British troops in Ukraine, implying that the British sent personnel to help train Ukrainian troops to operate Storm Shadow missiles. The discussion also indicated that the right course of action would be for the UK to take over, whatever that might mean. Additionally, Luftwaffe Air Force Lieutenant General Gerhards also explained,
"If they're asking about delivery methods, I know how the British do this. They always transport them in Ridgeback armored vehicles. They have several people on the ground."
Now, this is specific details on how the British conduct their convoys. Very important information, but also it was revealed how the French deliver their version of the Storm Shadow missiles by using Audi Q7s to transport them. So this is really quite sensitive military logistic information, and also technically Western NATO forces are not supposed to be in Ukraine fighting Russia. Doing that is an escalation. So revealing these things turns up the heat on the conflict.
There's many ways to look at what you just said. One, why were the Russians... First of all, it talks about the Russian capability. The second thing is why would the Russians want to broadcast it?
Well, you know, going back to our monkey episode and how you want to reveal things...
The monkey comes in handy, huh?
It does come in handy, see?
I apologize for that. Anyway, coming back to the second thing, the second issue that I made... Why would they want to reveal it? Because if you reveal it, you then tell your opponents that you have the capability.
And that you know.
Therefore, they're going to do things to try and now stop the leak or find a way that this information doesn't get to the Russians.
And
that
purely means that from a military point of view, they're going to change their tactics and how they transport things.
Maybe yes, maybe no. That's not the point. The point is, it's in a bigger picture. Why would you jeopardize or compromising your ability to know what the other side is thinking in a time of war, that you would like to have the most information you can to help you?
I have two theories. Want to hear them?
All right, you can.
I mean, they're not really theories, but option number one, which we'll get into also later and is supported by some other material, is that they have so much capability, so much information, so many spies, so many sources, they're not afraid to lose one potentially or more. That's number one. And number two, they broadcast this on national TV in Russia. This is a propaganda game for them. Highly so. Russia state media is a well-oiled machine that requires this constant feeding of a narrative of their greatness. They also just had elections, which we'll get to also. So, not that elections in Russia are really ever something to really concern yourself about democratically, but...
Their first, I would say, point you were mentioning is that they have a lot of information. There's never enough, okay? You don't reveal what you have, even if you have a lot of it. Second, most of the information they're talking about is not human, it's SIGINT. And that's limited. You don't reveal it. Now, it's not like one of them is an agent or one of them works for the Russians, because that's not the point. The kind of information that I see or from what I gathered from this article was something they picked up.
Yeah,
they picked it up because,
you know, wasn't a human source.
Okay, so why reveal it? I mean, if it's two people talking in a room, what does it tell you? The room is bugged? Other means, they have other capabilities? Why reveal it? Now, if one of them is an agent, are they going to reveal the one of them is an agent? No. If one is reporting back on a piece of paper, wasn't a piece of paper anymore, but in a computer, why expose it? So the bigger picture is not coming from that angle. It's the bigger picture, building up another narrative that Ukraine is not able to
function on its own. Look at how great we are, that they need
and
all
they
this
need
other
all
help.
This help. Exactly. And the propaganda.
Digging a finger at the West as well.
Yes, and maybe by doing that, making the West make a decision, maybe they should change the way they're doing things and maybe not support Ukraine in the way they're doing. That will make it worthwhile putting on the table or revealing the information they have. Is it part of Cold War? It's a different part of Cold War. In Cold War, you don't reveal your cards. It's a different thing. Here, it's a different scenario.
Well, we have...
Cold War as well, you remember, was a lot about nuclear, a lot about...
Because it was a race. Well, not really a race. They both had it. But
it was technologically as well. Yes. A lot of it was technological. This has now come to a circle of not technology so much than actually who is taking control over this city, this town, this area.
Who's winning? That's boots on the ground. Yeah, okay. Well, we have Alexei Danilov, who is a Ukrainian national security advisor, and he warned that Germany is full of a new generation of Russian spies, saying that
we have made multiple warnings to our German partners about the spy network for Russians that are active in Germany. It is well known the Russians are listening to conversations of German officials, and we think this is not the last conversation they have. I assure you, in Germany, the spies feel very free-handed.
Danilov went on to say that Germany was vulnerable to Russian spies due to the history that it had with Russia, and also the pre-war cooperation, such as with oil deals and pipelines that they had going. A lot of Russians in Germany, and a lot of Russian interests in Germany.
Well, Germany is a European power. It's a leading, one of the, if not the leading country in Europe.
It also used to be split between East and West Berlin.
Yes.
With East Berlin being, as you know,
yes,
Russian-Soviet.
Yes, but I don't think today the communism is the important game anymore in Germany or in Russia. It's not communism against capitalism. It's the West against something else.
Yes, but my point being here and what Danilov is saying, which of course he has his own interests for saying that, obviously it's a big interwebbed game, is, you know, the Berlin Wall fell in what, 89, right? So it's not so long ago, you know. People still around back, like you said, you lived in the Cold War. There's still people who went through that, you know.
Yes, but... it fell because people didn't want to live in that scenario, specifically in East Germany.
All you need is 5% who still did that. They could be assets.
Look, most of the people there were not happy to be part of the Russian Empire anyway.
Yeah, but there was a small amount that...
Now,
and if they still remain...
No, look, you have to remember, what kind of information do you want? Do you want to know what the people in the street want, or you want to know what the leadership wants? Now, to get from the leadership, you have to be trusted. You have to go through vetting. So even if you're from East Germany, you're going to go through a vetting. It's not like, okay, 5% still support the Russians. Or
you know, Melita Norwood was in a position for 30 years.
Well, we talked about that as well. If someone is in a position for a long time, you don't want to touch him. But in this case, it's not the scenario. It's there's enough. Most of the people today in the positions that of interest are people who did not live under communism.
Most. But let's say I, in 1987, joined a government post, and I'm from East Berlin.
You did not, you're in 87?
In 87, the wall's still up.
No, you don't get a position. You didn't get a position in Germany.
Not in West Germany, but no. I had an East Germany position. And my
sympathies
East Germany's
were, finished. They
had let me finish. Okay. My sympathies were leaning towards Russia. Okay. The thing fell. There was the integration of the governments and all this kind of thing. I was filtered in. Okay. Obviously, it fell. I'm not going to reveal my sympathies, whatever. I'm now 30 years down the line, and they remember that back then, or they find me. I'm not saying this is what happens, but I think this is a hypothetical that could exist. It couldn't exist in London because this situation didn't exist in London. Other things existed in London, but this particular...
Yes, it is nice to say it, but on the practical point of view, if you have the right tools in place as the Germans have, they are making sure that the right people are in the right positions. Now, yes, there are many more capabilities of finding people that are sympathizers or willing to do it for money or blackmailed or whatever, because if you put enough people on the ground, you'll find people. Now, the question is what kind of information you want. If you're Russia, you want today more and more about NATO. You want more about the German assistance to the Europeans, the European cause. You want to know what are the Allies doing. You're looking in Brussels. Brussels, you know, in the NATO headquarters. Obviously, they're going to see what the decisions are made. They want to see what decisions are made by the Germans. So obviously, they're going to be involved because Germany as well is an economical power. Obviously, they're there. And if you look at it in a different way, what are the Russians going to spy on? This is what they want to do. They get up in the morning. There's a whole questions or requests that they have to bring the leadership the answers. So yes, they will put a lot of people and emphasis in Germany.
So when Alexei Danilov, the Ukrainian National Security Advisor, says that Germany is full of a new generation of Russian spies and they're basically operating free-handed and all of this, do you think he's lying or exaggerating? I mean, obviously, he's coming from a point of view of scaring the West and try to bring up support for Ukraine as well.
Well,
it's all interests.
The question would be what kind of information you're looking for and how you're looking for it. Today, most of the information, most of the intelligence, you can sit in behind your desk and get it. Okay?
Human intelligence, right.
But he's talking about human intelligence. But I'm saying that most of the information, if you really want to get more information, you can.
And now, we know that Russia has a very extensive hacking capability.
Yes. So it allows you to get a lot of information. Now, if you're going to, you'll excuse me if you're Luxembourg, but if you're Luxembourg, the Russians are not going to put all their emphasis on Luxembourg, even though it might be interesting. They'll go to Germany because that's where things are happening.
Germany, France, Great Britain.
Exactly. So in Germany, it's easier for them. It's closer. They have a lot of people there as well. So the capabilities are available. Are they saying they're recruiting more agents? Maybe they are. But I don't think that's the major thing.
German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius responded to the events by saying that Russia was using the recording to destabilize and unsettle NATO and its allies, adding that he hoped Putin would not succeed with this by releasing the call.
Again, the question is, what does he want to achieve by releasing it? Remember, that's what we talked about.
Unsettling. It's a propaganda boon for his people.
It's not for his people. It's not for his people.
And pointing a finger. Well, he wouldn't have broadcast it on national TV if it wasn't for his people.
No, he wants the West to know about it. He wants to make problems for the Western countries who are sending people without the knowledge of so-called their own people in their countries, to show the British people, look, your government said you're not involved. Look, you are involved. French or Italian or Germans, your government said they're not going to send troops. Yeah, they are sending troops. If your people are going to get killed, it's your fault. The message, I don't think, is to the Russian people. I think the message is to the Western countries, because he wants to destabilize or make sure that it doesn't happen.
Interesting.
I don't think it's for the Russian people. For the Russian people, he doesn't need it. What is it good for? For the Ukrainians? No. For the Russians? No.
It's about the propaganda boon of look at how great we are and always feeding that machine. But what you're saying is very interesting about the Western nations in that. Showing that, hey, your governments aren't being square with you. They said no boots on the ground, but hey, Brits, you got boots on the ground. Hey, there's this going on.
And if your country continues, you might find yourself in a war that you didn't even plan to. So
with the support for the war already on the decline.
And again, the big plan for the Russians is to try and have favorable governments in Western countries or other countries that won't be so against Russia. That's the objective.
Right.
So you play
the long-term objective.
So you do it in different ways.
Speaking about objectives and other tactics that they're doing, there have been some things going on. Russian defectors and those living in exile have been winding up dead, labeled as unsolved deaths, dying mysteriously. More than 50 people already have died in all sorts of strange and mysterious ways at this stage. Was Russian intelligence at work here? Were they assassinating and getting rid of dissidents? Well, there was a high-profile case in February of 2024, the killing of Maxim Kuzminov, a Russian helicopter pilot who defected to Ukraine in August of 2023. Kuzminov moved to Spain. He started a new life under a false identity until February of 2024, when his bullet-riddled body was found in a parking lot in a southern Spanish town, and a burnt-out getaway car was found nearby. This is one example of over 50 people.
Look, 50 sounds a big number, right?
It's not a small number. First of all, you have to have the defectors get away and then be high profile enough.
What I want to say is this. 50 sounds a big number, right? What does it mean? You don't see 50 defectors from the United States or 50 defectors from UK or from France or from any other country. Why? Because people don't want to leave. Who wants to leave? People who feel that they're persecuted or they're not happy with what's going on in the regime, or the regime will put them away and they want to leave their country. Now, if you're a dictatorship, you don't want these things to happen. So you do two things. One, you prevent it from happening. Second, when someone does leave, you decide to go and get him, so that it gives a message to the more people not to do it. So you have
But there, they're not taking credit for it. These are just mysterious deaths.
No one's going to take credit. You don't take credit for things like that.
Of course.
We're talking about building up a legacy.
A legacy, yeah. The monkey episode comes in handy once again.
You want to build up a legacy. You want to build up... You don't want to say you did it. You have a proxy who does it. Now, sometimes you use your own people if it's very delicate, like they tried to do it in the UK, and they did it, and they tried to poison some people, and they did kill some people.
Sometimes you use Wagner in Africa, which...
Exactly. By having a bomb on his plane and getting rid of him.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things you can do. But I would say, or I would think, that when you assassinate someone who's obviously gone against you, you don't want to have your fingerprint all over you, because you don't want your own people to get caught. Or you do it very professionally, or you use proxy.
I mean, it's very feasible to think that they could have hired some Spanish mafia or something to
exactly.
do something.
Today you can hire people to do all sorts of things.
Of course, we also have Alexei Navalny, who I quoted in the beginning, Russian opposition leader who died just recently, February 16th,
yes,
most likely assassinated by Putin and Putin's regime.
Well, I won't say Putin.
Putin's regime.
Putin's regime.
Putin himself didn't go and do it.
And
he certainly had a finger in it.
If he didn't, he has a problem.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
And obviously he did.
Now, Navalny, what's interesting here, though, is Navalny was already in a Russian prison. Okay. And there was also a previous attempt made on his life. Famously, on the 20th of August, 2020, he was poisoned by the Novichok nerve agent, almost dying on a plane. At first, it was assumed that Novichok was placing his tea on the plane. Later, it was thought it was in his water bottle at the hotel. And finally, they found out that it was probably on his clothing. He barely survived this attempt. And after surviving it, he decided to go back to Russia, where he was immediately arrested and then thrown in prison, knowing full well that that would happen. And he's been in jail for now quite a length of time. And then, even though he was relatively healthy, aside from, you know, harsh prison conditions, wound up dead February 16th. Very surprising. Most certainly on someone's orders. You can point a finger at who.
He was a brave man.
Yes.
To go back. Knowing that he was going to be a target.
He was a symbol of hope for the Russians.
Well,
who opposed
him. He wouldn't have won.
But if he was allowed to run? Difficult to say.
No, there's a way to win elections without winning elections. Okay? Especially in places like that. Other places not far away from Russia, like Belarus, how it's done. Okay?
I mean, it wouldn't have been a fair election, that's for sure.
It's a fair election. He won fair and square.
100% of the vote, got it.
Not even 100%, but he would have...
No,
that's
we'll
not
see.
The issue.
Well, I'll give you the number that Putin won by in a minute.
What he was... This is not about him and about the Russian elections and about Putin. I don't want to get into trouble.
You don't want to get into a war with Putin?
No, it's not. It's still too fresh. But the elections in Russia was obviously he was going to win. It's about, as we said in the beginning remarks, when you stay in power for too long, two things happen to you. One, you think you can get away with everything, and second, you find it very difficult to leave because you have so much baggage that you've carried with you that you're afraid that if you leave, it's going to go against you and you might find yourself in the wrong place. So you're actually in a catch-22 situation where basically at a certain point, you just can't leave your position because there's so many decisions you've made that could eventually go against you that actually you prefer to stay. And that's what happens.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine in 2022, European governments have ejected over 600 suspected Kremlin spies from their borders. What do you make of that?
So it depends what degree of spies. Is someone that was recruited and running in the German parliament or someone in NATO, in the headquarters? There were not 600 of those. There were Russians who came in.
I imagine a lot of attachés in different places.
Well, if you're talking about Russian diplomats, they run agents or they try and do intelligence work. And from time to time, the West, sometimes tit for tat, they expel and you expel and... You have no choice because you get caught and things like that happen. And
you don't hang them, right?
You
keep
don't
them
hang
and
them.
Then you trade them with your guys.
If you have a chance to, before they assassinate them. Or if you don't have worthy people, you say that someone's a spy who isn't, and then the West is soft enough to release him for someone who really isn't a spy. Because the West, at least, you would presume that when they convict someone, he is actually a spy.
You hope or so.
And in Russia, they just pick up people... sometimes randomly stick on them something that's not really real and then use it for bargaining chips. Same thing like North Korea did, same thing Iran does. A lot of these countries, it's nothing to do with what you did. It's just your nationality. And if they want to release one of their guys badly enough, and they will do it.
Okay, so you've mentioned a couple countries now. So let's talk about the chessboard. in the world that we're living in today. Though this may not be the second Cold War, it's something. And on this thing, there's a figurative chessboard. So what pieces are on what side?
Well, you know what pieces are on what side. The West side, I think, is quite clear. And you have, if you look at Russia on one side, and look at it as the front, as Russia's the front because of Ukraine, because as Europeans, we're looking at it as Russia against the West, Russia against Ukraine. So who's for Russia? Who is for Ukraine? That's your line. Who has been helping Russia? Belarus. Okay, so Belarus is clear. It's a state. It's,
but Belarus Lukashenko, is a pawn.
It was, yes, it was...
In this chessboard. But is Russia the king or the queen?
No. He's the king. The queen. Okay, because the king. No, it's the king.
He's the king? Because the queen is the one with all the power on a chessboard, really.
Well, but if the king falls, that's the end of the game. When the queen falls, you find another queen.
Okay, so Russia's the end of the game. China's on Russia's side.
Wait.
I'm jumping ahead.
Wait, you asked me a question, let me answer.
Okay.
Okay? So you have Russia. In Europe, you would say Belarus is with the Russians. Now, as we saw, in Russia, there are all sorts of other elements that they use to help them. Okay? Now, at a certain point, he had to use the Wagner Group or other proxy groups that the Russians had to help him do the work. Now, they come sometimes from Chechnya, from other republics in Russia that have maybe some autonomous ways. So they're, of course, always going to be on the Russian side. Now, he needed to go further along. Now, Russia was involved in Syria, and he was involved with Iran, and that was a good idea to get the Iranians to help him out with the missiles and Scuds and all sorts of equipment that he didn't have or he didn't have them handy at the time. So they're on board. Now, obviously, North Korea, you would say, is in the same package because they help those countries, and it makes sense for them to be on the same side. Now, China, you can't say China is on the side of Russia. You can say China is not on the side of, is not
it's
taking...
It's not on Ukraine's side.
It's not on Ukraine's side, but the Chinese, as far as I understand, are not selling know-how and sophisticated weapons to Russia to fight their war. They will help them if it comes to UN decisions or putting a little bit of pressure, because China is playing a different game. That's against the United States.
Yes. And it's in their interest for the United States to be tied up with Russia.
Because they're looking at Taiwan.
They're playing a different game.
They're playing, not playing chess. They're playing a different game. While everybody's playing chess, they're playing a different game. Mm-hmm. So it's not a Cold War. It's a different kind of war because they have other interests. Again, another gentleman who is in power longer than was planned in the beginning, but he changed the rules.
Xi Jinping, yeah.
He changed the rules. That's one of the problems. In the beginning, it was 10 years, tenure or 5-year tenures, and 10, and now it's become more. What other countries? You would say anyone who is a proxy of Iran will be on the side of the Russians. Who would that be? Be the Houthis in Yemen. Now, just I think yesterday or today, there was an agreement between the Houthis and the Russians and the Chinese that they will not attack them. Why? For the same reason. They realize it's a problem for them. Now, what happens if there's a Chinese ship going through the Gulf to Egypt or Israel or Cyprus? It's Chinese interest for them not to hit it, but are they going to? We will have to see. But I would say you have a specific line. You have the Hezbollah, okay, who you would say are on the same page, because they were with the Russians fighting side by side in Syria. So there's already a cooperation there. And there's other elements. So people who are against America or the United States or the West obviously will be aligned with Russia. Now, does Russia need all these things? At this stage, they needed time to regroup, to make themselves a stronger army and a better army and hold the positions. They started off badly. It will become worse, and now they're stabilizing themselves, and now they're to the next stage. What is the next stage?
And the inverse with the West.
And what's the next? Yeah. The next stage, from their point of view, is weaken the connection between the West and Ukraine. Therefore, you can see that by putting out an article that they did of the support of the West to Ukraine by having boots on the ground goes for the objective that we talked about, weaken Ukraine by weakening the West, by weakening the capability of the leaders of the West to help Ukraine or support Ukraine. That is a bigger game.
Where's Turkey in all of this?
It's in the middle. Turkey is part of NATO.
Turkey
is a part of NATO, but it has its own agenda. It has its Islamic agenda. He has his own grand situation of himself. Because Turkey, you're not talking about as a country, you're talking about as Erdogan. Yeah. He's another person who's been in power for a long time, who says he will retire or won't run again. He won the last elections. It was a surprise that he did in the way he did. In different conflicts in the Middle East, he's really taking the side of not of the West, contrary to the NATO of the West. But okay, that's, you know, it doesn't mean that every country doesn't have its own agenda and its own foreign policy. It's not, you didn't give up your own foreign policy. But is Turkey allowing, stopping grain from Ukraine to go to outside? No. Is it supporting Russia with equipment leaving from other places to go there? Maybe it's not. It's taking its own decision of how he wants to conduct himself. They have their own issues they have to deal with, if it's the Kurds in Turkey and around in their different kind of borders, and they have to put that interest first. And if it goes with what the Russians want, then let's be with the Russians from his point of view.
As you said, Russia had to regroup. With its army tied down, difficulty in its military gains, its unconventional warfare was ramped up. Operations overseas, covert operations, the longer game. It thought Ukraine initially would be a blitz. It wasn't. They overestimated their capabilities and underestimated Ukraine's capabilities. And now, they're being smart about it. They realize, rightfully, that Western support of Ukraine would be very strong in the beginning. But the West has a short memory, and it gets distracted very easily. And when it gets bogged down, it doesn't like it. So support is waning. How much is the world waiting on the American elections, do you think, for major operations to occur?
It's hard to tell. If I'm looking at it now, I think Macron is the only Western leader who is one of the big leaders who's still in power since the beginning of the crisis in Ukraine. All Western countries, because of the democracy, they have to go to be elected. And if Ukraine is an issue and supporting Ukraine is not going to bring them into power, therefore it will weaken the capability of these leaders to continue and support Ukraine. Now, in America, it's different. First of all, they have forces in Germany, and they have forces, and they have NATO, and they're involved in NATO in a bigger way than most countries. Trump has his own ideas about what it means to be part of NATO and finance and everything, and he came up with some comments that were quite puzzling about if he doesn't care if some countries who don't pay, he doesn't care about them. It's not the right message that for Ukraine to hear. You would think that if Biden gets reelected, it will be better for Ukraine, just because of all the history that went, even the personal history of Ukraine, yeah, and Biden and Trump. And it...
So everything's personal.
Everything is always personal. It's always personal.
Biden and Putin go way back.
So does Trump. He goes all the way back to Russia.
In a different way.
So, yeah, they're waiting. Yes, because it obviously, in some ways, a president who is in his last year of his tenure.
Well, they would both be in their last.
A president who is in his last year of his tenure, he doesn't have to care about the elections.
Yeah, they do whatever they want.
Okay. Now, Biden and Trump, both of them are not in that case in this election.
No, Biden they would
wants,
be.
No. We're talking about if Biden now was not going to be elected because now he finished his eighth year.
Okay, in that
sense. Trump just finished his eighth year. He then acts according to what he really thinks he should do.
Right, but once not they get elected, they would both be in
maybe.
There.
And then in their last year, like they are now, before an election, they don't care because they're not the ones who are going to run.
Right.
But in this case, Biden is still running because he's running.
And Trump is still running as well.
And Ukraine is the part of the agenda. And Trump is running again. It's not happened for a long, long time, at least in our lifetime, the two presidents are running. And in both cases, you would say it has an effect on Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
A good effect. We will see in the end. I don't know. I mean, it all depends as well on how Ukraine handles itself. And if they start losing and it doesn't work out for them, then it's a different scenario. I still maintain, as we said in our first podcast on Ukraine, that the biggest victory for the West was the fact that it didn't spill over from Ukraine to other countries. And NATO stood strongly behind it and say, if you attack a NATO country, we will all attack you. Ukraine is not NATO. It might be part of the European Union a little bit more, but it's not NATO.
Yet.
And that is still the scenario, there's still the situation.
Oleksandr Danyluk, an associate fellow at the RUSI, the Royal United Services Institute, the world's oldest and UK's leading defense and security think tank, said that the Russians still invest billions into intelligence operations in Europe, developing capabilities which are designed for interference into elections, radicalization of different social, ethnic, religious groups, including minorities, and investing billions into political proxies who can actually even come to power. You discussed this earlier in the episode, how they're trying to support friendly governments and different things. They are playing the longer game. They're going back to Cold War type tactics of subverting.
Are you saying we're going back to the second Cold War?
Well, there are parallels, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
You know, they're not fighting.
You want to
physically.
Win. You want to try and influence the countries. And today is it's easier. Well, easier. It's a different way of doing things.
Look, in the Cold War, we know that they funded radical groups
yes.
to help cause dissent in different countries.
In the Cold War, it was clear. It was communism against capitalism. This is not communism. It's something else.
Well, this is exactly what Oleksandr Danyluk says. It's not anymore an ideological fight. It's not like communism fighting capitalism, like the Soviets would say. It's that authoritarian countries are trying to subvert the West as a stronghold of democracy, freedom, and human rights. And this is, for them, an existential fight.
Yes.
So they are feeding the flames of dissent in different countries to try to cause problems.
It was always the case.
But more so now, I think. No? You don't think there's an increase in all of the activities here?
I think if you ask a superpower if it can influence the results of elections in a certain country in favor of them and various ways, they will say, okay, what do you have in mind? And they say, well, if we have information that could make a candidate who hates us, people not vote for him, then let's bring this information out. So then the leader will say, okay, let's get information by finding information that is not favorable for this person, put it out public, and will weaken him. Today it's easier to do than in the past. It's not human. It's going into the SIGINT world and finding information and leaking it and making sure it goes out there for the public and then changing the people's opinion about certain things. So if you say, okay, in America, in the beginning when Trump said with Clinton, when they were the first election, when he was elected,
mm-hmm.
about the interference of Russia for him or against him, and that's what it was about, bringing information that could help one candidate against the other. Now, is it going to go in most of the countries? Yes, they're not going to do it in every country, but if they have something or they have a candidate who is really, really against them, they will try and stop him. I think it would be done by most countries today.
Of course, but even in things, you know, we have TikTok, for instance, that's banned in some places. And in America, they're looking to ban it now. Why? Because it's being used as a tool by the Chinese Communist Party to do a certain narrative. You know, I'm not saying that every single video you're going to watch on TikTok, no. but they're trying to convey certain
things. It's a legitimate way of influencing your opponent.
Yeah, of the way that they think, you know. Yeah. So even if one in every 20 videos is something that has a slight tilt towards one direction, you know, that'll happen. I mean, I remember the things happen everywhere. I remember on Facebook, a video popped up that it was like a pigeon saluting. And I was like, what is this? That seems weird. And I clicked on it, a video. And then it was a video that showed Putin walking by, and then he salutes, and then a pigeon like salutes Putin as if. And I was like, oh, that's pretty funny. And then what happened later is I got another video of Putin doing something, and then another video of Putin doing something. Now, thinking back, it could just be a funny whatever. Or even something as silly as that could be funded to show those kind of videos out in the world. Because why? Because it shows Putin in a certain like macho man fun way. And those simple, subtle ways that countries can affect the way people think is extremely powerful. Extremely powerful.
Yes, and it's a tool. And now the question, of course, is the funding that you get for it. And I think in this article it's mentioned as well that there's a lot of money going in for it by the government.
Billions. Because everything, billions. Yeah,
because it's very important and useful. Because as we said in the beginning, in the first episode of the first one, we said, if you can invest money in intelligence and espionage, it's much cheaper than investing in a war. Yeah.
How much does a MiG jet cost versus how much does those videos cost?
Exactly. Yeah, of course. So that's what you would do.
A little bit more of an optimistic note. William J. Burns, the director of CIA, not the Culinary Institute of America, the other CIA, he said in January that disaffection with the war is continuing to gnaw away at the Russian leadership and the Russian people. Beneath the thick surface of state propaganda and repression, that undercurrent of disaffection is creating a once-in-a-generation recruiting opportunity for the CIA. We're not letting it go to waste. What do you think of that sentiment?
What can I say? There's always periods in time where you have a better opportunity to recruit people. But it's not just recruiting people, it's where you find them. And what positions are they? The people he wants are in maybe different positions.
If we talk about the four spies of Sun Tzu, first type of spy, I don't remember exactly how he categorized them, but it was the people, you know, the person, the peasant, right. The local. Then it was the aristocratic in the government. Then it was the dead agent, and then it was like the super spy agents. So they're not talking about recruiting the super spy agents unless it's a double agent. Dead agents, not really relevant. The aristocratic people who are in the positions are harder to get. They're not, if they're dissatisfied with Russia, they're probably not going to be in the government. No, maybe, but harder. So they're talking about the people, right? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying today's world is a bit different because you're looking at different things. So you're looking at technology, you're looking at nuclear, you're looking at decision-making, you're looking at terrorism, you're looking at UMINT, you're looking at SIGINT. Each one is different. The capability is different, looking at propaganda, many things. Opportunities are there. It's all a question of how much effort you put into it. Does it make it easier? Because the more that you are at war or in a conflict with a certain country, it's more difficult for you to do the work in their country. Because if you're ready, it's not like there's flights of 10,000 American tourists who are coming into Russia every week. No. Or flights from Russians coming into the United States going to Disney World. No.
Yeah, but you're probably not going to recruit a Russian in Moscow. You're probably going to go somewhere else. And
why not?
Because it's harder, like we just said. It's better to recruit someone elsewhere.
So what is he saying? He's saying, so it means it's more difficult, right?
Well, no.
Everything is difficult.
Everything is difficult, but you recruit a Russian in Vienna.
No, you don't just recruit someone just because he belongs to a certain country.
No, I'm not saying you do that.
Let's recruit all the Martians. No, they're not here, right? They're not arrived yet.
I got an idea.
What's your idea?
They could send a boat, and then it crashes, and on the boat they could have a monkey.
I like your thinking, but that's not where it goes.
Okay.
You don't start by recruiting just because someone's a national. You recruit by objectives.
Of course.
And then you decide who you want to go for. You just don't go fishing and catch any fish.
You go hunting.
It's different. You don't hunt without knowing who your target is. The days of just going mass fishing is not exactly what you do these days. Maybe some people do, maybe some countries do, but you can't. It doesn't work this way anymore.
Between March 15th and 17th of 2024, Russia had its elections. Do you know who won?
No, I didn't look at the news. No. I'm not aware of it.
You weren't aware? You didn't?
No.
Do you want to do
I must have missed it.
Educated guess on who you think might have won the Russian presidential elections?
I wasn't aware there were more than... After the first 10 candidates, I lost count.
Lost count. Well, I'm going to give you a hint.
Okay, we know who won. Yeah,
you know who won. Putin won with 87.28% of the vote. It's a good number, 87.28% of the vote. Second place came in with just 4.31%, and then the numbers went down from there. But I think it's nice that he didn't give himself 100% of the vote, or over 90. You know, got to keep it looking a little bit realistic, right?
Right.
They also conducted elections abroad for Russian citizens. Now, this I find quite interesting. 388,791 people voted. Everywhere they voted, Putin won the vast majority. He won 56.82% in Germany, 75.22% in Estonia, 70.6% in Latvia, 53.6% in Australia, 54.7% in Armenia, 42.23% in the United States, and specifically in Washington, he won 63.33% of the Russians who voted in those places. Why is this interesting? Of course, these numbers can be fake as well and exaggerated as well, but if they're not... That's a lot of people still supporting Russia outside of Russia, or supporting Putin outside of Russia.
Look, a lot of Russians, if you ask them, they support what Putin is doing. You know, it's just because we are not happy with it doesn't mean that they are. They believe in what he's doing. And in most dictatorships, there are a majority means the wrong way, but there's a lot of people who support a leader who's been there a long time because they're afraid of anything, not afraid of change. And they've all their life, they've known this, and they want the stability, and they believe in what he's saying. And it's always been part of history like that. I mean, in general, people don't like change.
That's true.
Should we change the subject?
Or the light bulb. Does this begin and end with Ukraine?
What do you mean an end?
Like if Ukraine gets resolved, does it end?
No. I mean, for Ukraine, we talked about it earlier and you said the Ukraine will not give up until they get the last piece of their land. And I said, eventually.
They'll have to make a deal.
But they'll have to make a deal. So it's not going to be the end because the people who are playing and the leadership at the moment cannot make a deal in both sides.
Do you think there's a chance that any nation switches sides?
Why would they?
Depends on the wind blowing, right?
If NATO is no longer NATO and it disintegrates because someone decides he doesn't want to pay anymore or he kicks everybody out, then some smaller countries who are very close to some other big countries might decide that maybe they have to change their alliances. Mm-hmm. The thing is that we hope it shouldn't happen. And that's the game that we hope that the new, whoever's going to be elected in America, won't bring out to that situation. The interesting thing is to look at another country, that's India and China, of course. Where are they on the globe? Where are they on the map? What part are they playing? And what is their aim? And that as well, to be... In that part of the world is different than Europe. Europe is very clear. You're all for us or not. In the East, it's not so cut clear.
Well, India, I believe, was buying gas still from Russia.
India is a big country.
Huge.
With most of the population of the world. It has to take care of itself, yeah. And it has to make the decisions what is good for India.
Yeah.
And it always will. And it's okay.
It's hard enough to maintain its own stability without worrying about
And Modi's doing a great job, and he has to balance himself between the situation. He has conflicts with China, he has conflicts with Russia, but still he has to maintain it. So this is where it's important to see what happens. I don't see them turning one against the other.
And of course, always waiting with its chessboard, with the pieces ready for the game to start if it does. Is Taiwan?
I don't think so.
I mean, it's waiting. It's fearful. It's unsure.
It's been fearful since the day it been, we became independent.
I would say now more than...
No.
No? You think it's not a more dangerous time for Taiwan?
It's a dangerous time, and always has been a dangerous time.
Because we've, in our past couple episodes, every time we've been saying, if I was Taiwan, I'd be looking out to see what's going on here.
Yes, it's, but meantime, I think that after the elections there, it was very anti-China. The people, look, it's one thing wanting to take over a country.
As China's seeing, it's another thing doing it.
It's not only doing it, is what are the prices you pay for doing it? I mean, okay, you want to claim it's yours. It's not, Taiwan is not Hong Kong. Taiwan is not Macau. And you could say if the people, most of the people in Taiwan want to be Chinese, it's a different scenario. It's not the case. Would the Taiwanese just sit around and welcome the Chinese walking in their streets?
No, it'll be another Ukraine to a certain extent. Why, it's an island, so it's more difficult.
Yeah, so eventually they'll, if things might change, but basically you never know. At this stage, I don't see that happening.
Anything else you want to say on this topic?
No.
Marina Myron, an analyst at King's College London's Department of War Studies, said, "The Europeans had a sense of security that the Russian spies are not there anymore, that their capabilities have been significantly curtailed. But the problem is, they have not been. They are mightier than ever." Thoughts?
Comes back to our first remarks we made about people staying in power for too long. And we mentioned it even when we talked about Ukraine. He thinks he can go with everything. He thinks he knows better than anyone else. And what information is he fed? I think the big change will happen after Putin leaves the arena. And that will make the decision. That will make the difference. Where's Russia going from there? What is the direction? What will he, and that is not happening now because he's been elected for until 1930, I think.
1930?
Sorry, 2030, 1930, a bit, 100 years a bit early. Hopefully we'll be able, things will happen before then, but we'll see.
This was Spies and Lies. Thanks for listening. And remember,
if you stay in power for too long, things start getting bad.
Spies and Lies is a Grumpy Golem production, with original scoring and mastering by Julian Dussault. If you enjoyed listening, don't forget to share with your friends and leave a comment or review wherever you listen from. It really does help, and we appreciate every review. If you have any questions or subjects you'd like for my father and I to cover, drop us a message, and we'll do our best to get back to you. And of course, we are gearing up towards our Q&A at the end of Season 2, so if you have any specifics you'd like to ask us, let us know, and we'll try to include them in the Q&A. You can reach us on our Facebook page for Spies and Lies, or at grumpygolemproduction@gmail.com. That's grumpygolemproduction@gmail.com. Until next time.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.